The Blue Ridge Area Food Bank and its partner food pantries are open and ready to help. Did you lose a job? Has your family income been cut? This might be the first time you've walked down this road, but you aren't alone. Learn where to get help by visiting brafb.org/find help or go to wchv.com. Young man, rhythm's got a hold of it too. Got the rock and roll morning and the boogie woogie blues. Visiting with Dr. Lauren Childs, professor of mathematics, math versus COVID-19, and you're modeling. So you use this math and you can beat COVID-19 95% effective, Lauren?
Yes, and so certainly that the when we talk about it being more than 95% effective, we're talking about in a high feasibility setting, which for us in the model we defined as at least 90% of contacts being traced in a very timely manner, so within half a day, and that those individuals, once they were in quarantine, had very few other additional contacts. And then if those cases, those who are quarantined were truly infected, that they had very good isolation. And so the context of being very effective is going to be in the context of how good the contact tracing is itself. Are we able to capture those contacts, most of those contacts, and are we able to do it quickly?
Please be gentle with me, Lauren. Thank you for joining us this morning. Graduate of New York City school system, so you know, please don't ask me to do math on the fly. We're going to count on you to do that. How are you doing this morning? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing fine this morning. Thanks for having me.
I hope everyone in your world has done well through the COVID-19 closures, and sort of as we cover it and as it moves and morphs, we hear different things. Well, masks work, but we didn't want people wearing them, and all these different stories on the fly of where we are. It must make it daunting for somebody who wants to do scientific research, especially in the world of mathematics, to be trying to study something that, you know, the data seems to be moving every time you turn around.
Yes, that's certainly the case, that we're learning things every day about the virus and about how the disease progresses and all of that. And so there is definitely moving information, but that's one of the benefits of mathematical modeling, is that we can incorporate those differences and make predictions about how they will affect the outcome.
Now, of course, Virginia Tech has been lucky that they haven't been dragged into the kleeglamps of modeling, because I think some of our modeling, and I think some of the modeling was just simply because the variable, look at me using mathematics terms, of, you know, how we as a society would react to COVID-19 and the information we were getting from our government officials, our health individuals, couldn't necessarily be predicted. What are you seeing in your modeling, and in a world that does this and has taken some hits in public perception, does it redouble your efforts to make sure that you're getting accurate stuff so that what comes out is going to be the most use?
Yes, and I think it's really important to keep in mind that there is a set of modeling efforts that are trying to do forecasting, sort of the way your weather is being forecasted, and obviously that's a very hard thing to do, and we can get decent approximations for, you know, several days or a week out, but it's very hard to get something beyond that. But there's lots of work that's also looking at other aspects, and the research that I have been involved in is that type of research where we're really looking at the comparison between several different measures, in particular individual quarantine and active symptom monitoring, which are two case-based measures. And we aren't trying to predict that there'll be X number of cases on a particular day in a particular location, but trying to say, given the scenario of the disease and what we know about it, which type of intervention would be more effective.
So,
and we find through our research that the individual quarantine is much more effective as a case-based measure than the active symptom monitoring.
Well, this is hopeful for me because as soon as contact tracing became a story, a lot of my listeners started saying, hold on a second here. You mean somebody from the government's going to track me and to keep track of me and have access to me? Because and there's just a lot of things that made people itchy about the idea of contact tracing through it. So you found, and I'm reading your work here. Now, is it pronounced SIAM or is it an acronym, the publication that your work was published in? I guess you worked with some of the folks from Harvard, helping bring them up to speed there, I guess, on your coattails, I'm sure, Lauren.
This work was definitely a nice collaboration with faculty at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. And this work in particular was published in the SIAM News Journal, and SIAM is an acronym for Society for Industrial and Applied Mathematics. And related work was also published in the Lancet for Infectious Diseases with that same group from Harvard.
Well, I know that's a publication more people have heard of this year than have ever heard of it before, because it gets some national news coverage there. But your research seems to say that you say it's 95% effective in stopping transmission. The quarantine, the self-quarantine, I guess you mean the 14 days waiting through the incubation period, and maybe that number goes down as we learn more about the incubation period, right, Lauren? But you've said that that's remarkably efficient.
Yes, and so certainly that when we talk about it being more than 95% effective, we're talking about in a high feasibility setting, which for us in the model we defined as at least 90% of contacts being traced in a very timely manner, so within half a day, and that those individuals, once they were in quarantine, had very few other additional contacts. And then if those cases, those who are quarantined were truly infected, that they had very good isolation. And so that the context of being very effective is going to be in the context of how good the contact tracing is itself. Are we able to capture those contacts, most of those contacts, and are we able to do it quickly?
Professor Lauren Childs from Virginia Tech is on with us, who's done this great research published in the SIAM Journal and in the Lancet, along with some folks from Harvard as well, the health school in Harvard, and I guess you bring the mathematics wood to it, associate professor of mathematics at Tech, finding that self-quarantine is the most effective. Now, you talked about the use of contact tracing. Is that self-contact, or is that still requiring somebody from the Virginia Department of Health to go around and say, have you been anywhere, or is this, the way we've dealt with other infectious diseases, where when you test positive for it, then you call anyone you've met in the last, couple of days, couple of weeks? What would the window be on something like that?
So our research hasn't addressed how the contact tracing particularly has been done, whether it's been through individuals or through, say, public health officials, for example. But we do keep this, it is important in the model just how many of those contacts are reached and how quickly they're reached. How far back in time you have to look has to do with our understanding of how quickly symptoms are appearing. And as we've discussed, that has changed a bit throughout the course of the epidemic as people learn more about the disease. And it's certainly going to be involved with how recently if you are infected, how recently you feel you may have been exposed to someone who could have transmitted it to you. And so, a lot of our research doesn't specifically address how the contact tracing is done. The public health officials certainly have more training and more background in it than, say, doing simply calling everyone that you know.
Let me ask you this, Professor. We hear, because we deal in pop culture, I've called it the Say It, Don't Spray It campaign. Anytime you get Joe Dirt clips on the radio is good. But, you know, the mindset is wear a mask, wear a bandana, not for yourself. You're not protecting yourself. You're protecting somebody else because you don't know if you have it. I've been going through a lot of the research out of Hong Kong and South Korea and India that seems to indicate, I guess it's somewhere between a day to a day and a half, they've got it narrowed down, that you are infectious before you ever have any kind of symptomology to it. Does that throw a spanner in your math, or as we narrow that number down, does that help your mathematic equation and the predicting and the modeling become even more accurate, as you've said?
Yeah, that was certainly a more precise value for that number, certainly helps would help our understanding. But one of the main things that we were looking at is whether, you know, active symptom monitoring, where you're just monitoring for those symptoms, could be as effective as individual quarantine. And as there seems to be so much of this pre-symptomatic transmission where individuals are transmitting the disease without even having any of these symptoms, then the active symptom monitoring does much worse than the quarantine, because it's simply something looking for symptoms. But in general, the active symptom monitoring is something that is sort of less costly to society. It's not asking individuals to stay home when they feel fine. It's not, requiring the availability of space where people can be separated from other individuals.
Professor Lauren Childs on with us from Virginia Tech. She's done some great work in this model that is mathematically proving 95% effective in stopping transmission if you follow the protocols of knowing who you've been around and if you catch it. And what are some of the wild cards, Lauren, that get thrown into this? Say I went to a protest about the police or a rally for the president, or say a football game against Clemson, are these all wild cards? I had to throw that in there for the Hokies. What are the wild cards that as our society tries to get back to quote unquote normal, that we can do or are going to really kind of throw off the numbers that you found in your model?
So certainly that number of more than 95% effective is going to be in that setting where we are capturing a lot of contacts. And so if individuals are in situations where there are a lot of potential contacts with individuals they may not know or may not be able to identify at a later point, such as some of the types of things that you mentioned, then it's much harder to trace those contacts, and we're sort of no longer, it's harder to trace those contacts and it's harder to do it quickly. So we're no longer in that high feasibility setting where we have that high effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And of course, that the feasibility setting is going to be something that's changing as we have more resources to do contact tracing and have more people trained to be contact tracers. And it's going to vary by community to community on what exposure is like and what the local resources are.
Is the barrier protection, that's a nod to Dr. Fauci, the masks, the whether it's a bandana simply or we have radio station, we've replaced T-shirts with masks apparently. The new promotional item is a mask with the radio station logo on it. I'll send one to you. Whatever it may be, but that sort of, again, back to the say it, don't spray it, does that add to the effectiveness of your model that the more of us are being cautious about not spreading it through our droplets, as the governor calls it, does that make your model even more effective?
So that's something that we haven't actually considered within the model. So that is a really interesting question, and lots of people are doing some really great research thinking about how the droplets spread in the air and how these masks are effective. But it's not something that we've taken into account here.
Well, when you publish your next paper in SIAM and it's about that, I want a little footnote somewhere. I don't expect you guys to say, this started when I was talking to some talk show host on Professor, I appreciate it. Lauren Childs, again, it's in The Lancet, it's in SIAM. What's the best place for somebody to read it? I presume Virginia Tech has a link to it on their school webpage.
Sure. Through the math department, my webpage there will have links to both of those publications. So certainly that's one place to look for it.
Last one, and this just struck me. I watched too much Columbo as a kid, so it's a pardon me. One last thing before I go. With the campuses reopening, are you advising, are you hoping that the model can be used by the administration both there at Tech and certainly at Radford? And if we ask really nice, maybe they can use it at UVA. I don't want to get all ACC on this. But, the administrators of these campuses can use some of your modeling or at least share it with the student body so that they see how effective this kind of stuff can be.
We're certainly interested in having, the model be as useful as possible. And I know that the Virginia Tech leadership is considering all of the available data in making these very difficult decisions. And obviously, it's a very complicated issue. And I have confidence in them taking into account all of the information that they have, including things such as from our modeling efforts.
Oh, well, certainly, they don't have to go very far to find it. So, Professor, thank you again so much for taking some time out with us this morning. And I have a feeling before this is done, we'll talk again real soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.